AM. This is Commissioner Baker, and I am going to call the special meeting of the Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife to order. This is a single issue meeting where we are to get a briefing and public comment on our policy C-3619. Before we get going on that, are there any comments from anybody at all, beginning with commissioners? Okay. Let's see, is it Ron, are you doing the staff work on this, or take it away, Ron or Kelly?
That would be Ron.
Vice Chair Baker, I'll share my screen and we'll get through the presentation. Nikki, how are we doing?
Looks good.
Great. So Chair Carpenter, Vice Chair Baker, Commissioners, Directors, Ron Warren, Director's Office, going to talk through the modifications and the process that we're going through to revise the old Hatchery and Fishery Reform Policy, C-3619. So today, it's a quite truncated presentation. Just going to briefly talk about some of the recent past. Have a few slides to talk about public comment that we received and how we got to that extension, and then some next steps, and provide you as much time as possible for conversation. So have gone through since the mid 19, or sorry, 19, that's a little exaggeration, 2018, we've been working on the review of the hatchery policy. We've had a review of science and implementation. We've currently got a working draft of an anadromous salmon and steelhead hatchery policy. That process to move that draft document forward in the September meeting. And since that time, we've taken public comment. The Hatchery Writing Group has worked hard at trying to incorporate not only the critical pieces from the public comment that have been received, but also a document that staff provided to the commission on its ideas, thoughts about the policy. And then recently, this past Monday, the Fish Committee reviewed that, had a really good conversation, and believe you'll hear a motion to bring that to this table today for further public review through the month of November and into the December meeting. So I'll spend some considerable time on some of the public comments, and I see already I've got them. Recall back in September, we had several requests from the public to extend public comment that people didn't believe that they'd had enough time. I think what I heard the commission is that maybe not say that there hadn't been enough time, because we've certainly been working on this for a long time, but wanted to provide as much opportunity for the public to comment as possible. So we opened a public comment again from September 14th through a news release that we sent out seeking public comment, and that public comment closed on October 12th. And so this is a culmination of that. And again, as we have in many other fish program presentations to the commission, these are the themes that we heard from the public. So it's a couple of pages long, so I'll just read a couple of keys. Several people looking for the flexibility of the policy to seek increased production of salmon and steelhead. They think that the policy will, have us work on our predation on pinnipeds, to open more hatcheries. Some people believe that that the policy needs to be aligned with the statewide salmon recovery, which there are edits in the current draft that you'll hear about later that provide that. Lacks direct policy commitment, aligning hatchery production with state and federally adopted recovery plans. Again, those two very similar utilize more wild fish for brood stock. Some of these are great in theory. I think what one of the difficulties we have in operating facilities and meeting the standards that we've had in place for the last decade is that we don't have a tremendous amount of wild production to incorporate, and or we haven't had this focused direction to go in and modify a whole bunch of facilities to modify their infrastructure to be able to deal with returning broodstock in different ways. So, the policy, the draft policy creates a disconnect between hatchery management and fish science within the department. Too many supplemental hatcheries, not enough resources to meet the goals. Revised policy mandates, completion of HGMPs, removing internal accountability. A couple of different folks commented on the fact that they thought, and some of this is in personal conversation and follow up with those, is that they think that we're relinquishing some of our control to the federal government by relying only on the HGMPs. So that some people thought that the policy was just ignoring the science and implementation reviews that had been previously done. I hope that folks had an ability to read through some of the comments. There weren't so many numerous that it was too laborsome to read, but some very thoughtful comments that some of the conservation organizations and public citizens wrote in, that they definitely have a great grasp of hatchery operations, the current science behind things, and were offering their comments. So today is November 6th. You're receiving this very short briefing on public comments received to date. The public is due to comment today. The commissioners will consider draft language that's offered by the Fish Committee. That language is on our website. And as I said at the Fish Committee meeting, not all of you heard that, but what I said was that the department staff still have some concerns and want to continue to work with commissioners as they've crafted this policy. We want to be respectful of that, but we have concerns relative to risk management, some hatchery goals, and the adaptive management section. There are ways that we could also be critical of the flow of the document and the writing style, but some of that is just personal styles and trying to get through the messages in as concise a way as possible, but think that there are things where we can make this a more refined document and clearer if we allow our minds to see that. So I'm hoping that the commission, depending on the conversation, and questions either to me or others, put this out. We have a commitment on November 17th to meet with the Puget Sound or the tribal co-managers of the state in a virtual meeting such as this to talk about that draft. And I'm certainly hoping that we have a newly adopted policy for public review and public comment that we can take to those co-managers. And then the next time we'll get together.
Can't get it off.
Everybody's reaching for their phone.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. That I'm glad there's some levity in my presentation. It feels so serious. You know, I'm sitting here in the dining room and with my headphones on, and glad somebody's phone went off. So
I thought that was part of the audio background of your presentation.
Yeah, I'm gonna sing and dance in just a second and make everybody upset to their stomach. So. No, I'm not. Anyway, and then the next time, I'm sure that as public comment and tribal comments received as we go through November, that the the writing group will get back together to discuss new comments and further discuss some staff concerns and hopefully bring back to the Fish Committee a new version, possible new version of the policy, and have further dialogue in your December 3rd through 5th meeting. So with that, I'll conclude my presentation and turn it over to the commission and answer any questions that any of you might have.
So let's see, Nikki, for just attendance purposes, was Commissioner Graybill able to join us?
I'm here.
Okay, good. Larry, I'm going to ask you to take over. Are there commissioners who have questions or comments of Ron?
I guess I could start, if that's okay. Ron,
go ahead, Commissioner McGrable.
Thank you. Ron, do you have you mentioned a few areas that staff has some concerns, risk management goals and adaptive management sections, some suggestions on just the basic readability and flow of the document itself. Do you have those recommendations or concerns written out in form of edits, or how have you approached those concerns?
So Chair Carpenter, Commissioner Graybill, earlier in the month between when we met with you last, we provided a legislative markup to the draft policy. It was from the August 1st policy, and had a few conversations, and the writing group had extensive conversation about that markup. We, at that time, commissioners chose to add some language from that. And we're trying to get a document put together that outlined specifically some of the items within the risk management goals and adaptive management for you yesterday, but we just weren't able to get that completed. Hope that we can get that to you after this meeting, but we need to finalize that to make sure that it's ready for your consumption. I don't know that any eyes have been on it other than the primary author. And although a good author, I want to make sure that we're ready to present that document to you. I don't think that, although the comments that are in that document are consistent with some of the edits that we provided before that were not incorporated, we still think it's worthy to have further conversation to see if we can make improvements. We also realize that this is a commission policy. The staff, myself, didn't have the workload capacity to provide a draft. And the commission took this on and wrote this document. This is your document and your guidance to the staff. It also gives us a great deal of flexibility in what we do from a director delegated approval of either the HGMPs that we keep as our hatchery operational plans for each facility, or those that get turned into NOAA for approval through or under the Endangered Species Act that we can consider writing as well. So have a lot of flexibility. We would prefer it if it was in the policy, but again, this is your policy and we're trying to respect and do what we can to function through that process.
Also, Ron, let's see, there was a writing group meeting, I believe, last Friday that I missed. The meeting prior to that, staff had suggested several edits to different sections of the policy. Mm-hmm. And so I wasn't able to, I don't believe those were incorporated, or were they partially incorporated, or were any of the suggested edits and recommendations that came from staff incorporated to the most recent version that we're seeing?
Chair Carpenter, and now I see Vice Chair Baker's back, so I'm not sure which one to recognize as running the meeting, but Commissioner Graybill, yes, some of them were incorporated. I had conversations about where they fit best, and commissioners at that meeting made the decisions to either move, utilize or not utilize recommendations from staff. And so that's why we're here today to, I think, to for you to review, take public comment on the draft that's currently available on the website from the public, and let's go for more written comment and public comment, as well as getting back to our statewide co-managers and see what input they have on the current draft and continue to try to refine this to make it the best policy we can.
If I may interrupt, I would pass the gavel back to Vice Chair Baker and let her know that Commissioner Thorburn has her hand up as well. Thank you.
Thanks, Commissioner Thorburn.
Thank you. Ron, I was a little bit unclear in your presentation of the timeline slide, particularly in terms of the commissioner's actions. We are going to consider today really moving the current draft forward for further comment to perhaps have the meeting with the tribes. And then you talked about the December 3rd, 4th meeting for further consideration. So that's a little bit different than the timeline that we've talked about, as I understood you putting it forward. What is staff's position on the timeline?
Vice Chair Baker, Commissioner Thorburn, my understanding of the timeline since we initiated actual policy modification that we were trying to target the tail end of this year for final approval of the policy. And so I'm doing nothing more than trying to indicate commission decisions on when that timing is. And we are working diligently as we can as staff to make sure that we have the appropriate meetings, able to provide you roll-ups of public comment, work with the writing group and FISH committee to make sure that the policy is the best we can, but continue to target on that December approval date that you all have approved in the past.
Thanks. That clarifies it.
Thank you.
So I'm looking at the participants on this call, and as everybody knows, there is a lot of interest in this issue. I suspect that we will have quite a bit of public testimony. I now see that Commissioner McIsaac has raised his hand, but I just want to let people know that we do have some people who want to talk to us about this. So go ahead, Commissioner McIsaac.
Thank you, Madam Vice Chair. I was just anticipating by your language there that you were about ready to move to public comment, and the FISH committee report maybe ought to come out before we move to public comment.
Well, I didn't see that on the agenda, so pardon me, Don. Let's hear what the FISH committee has to say.
Larry, were you gonna take that on, or are you gonna?
No, you go ahead. When the last meeting was going around, I was deeply involved in it, deeply involved in about four other things. So I'll pass it to you if I may.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I'll be very brief too. I had not been anticipating even the FISH committee report. So this will be very, very brief. All members were present. I wasn't keeping track of the panelists and the attendees that closely, but I think that Commissioner Anderson, Baker, and Thorburn were present. It may be there were other commissioners present as well. I thought I saw something in the neighborhood of 40 participants at some point in time. It's a matter of, I think, recorded record, so that detail, if that's of interest, should be available to folks. The FISH committee just focused on one agenda item, as we're doing here today, and was to consider revisions to the August 1st public review draft. There were changes shown in yellow that were in response to the public comment, including the extended public comment. There were changes highlighted in yellow that were in response to the staff input that occurred in a couple of meetings, as Commissioner Graybill alluded to. The FISH committee did not discuss SEPA issues, but rather focused solely on policy language, SEPA being a separate issue. We did get significant public comment on SEPA, but what the environmental impacts are based on policy changes. So we haven't concluded the policy changes part yet. So at any rate, no discussion about SEPA at the FISH committee level. And then lastly, the FISH committee did reach a recommendation to the commission, which is posted on the website. And I'm not going to go over the recommendation. It's been on the website, and I think most of the commissioners were there, maybe more than I even took note of. And I would just be available to answer any questions on the FISH committee recommendation before we go to public comment.
Are there any other FISH committee members who want to comment on that? That rendition of the meeting? And if not, are there any questions from commissioners generally on the FISH committee report?
Nothing to add from me. Thank you.
Thanks, Bob.
Oh. But I believe Commissioner McIsaac covered it as well as we could. It was, like I said, it was a long and intense meeting, and he covered it. So let's move on.
So do we have anything that we need to discuss before we go to public comment on C-3619? I see no hands. So Nikki, I'm going to ask you to kind of keep track of everything here. Do we have people who want to talk to us?
Okay, so we'll now take public comment. As a reminder, everyone receives 3 minutes for comment. Everyone's currently muted, so if you have a question, please raise your hand. If you're on the computer, the raise hand button appears under your name. If you're on the phone, please press star 9 and wait to hear you have been unmuted. Let's see, we've got two so far, but they're rolling in. I'll just go ahead and start. Let's see, first we have Jessica Helsley. Go ahead, Jessica, make sure to unmute yourself.
Thank you, Chair Carpenter and Commissioners. My name is Jessica Helsley and I'm the Washington Director of the Wild Salmon Center. I appreciate the opportunity to provide you with our concerns and to correct several edits made to the document based upon our previous written comments. As currently written, the policy, we believe, is a blatant abandonment of science, completely ignoring the Washington Academy of Science report and disregarding the growing concerns of staff, while also failing to consider existing recovery plan requirements. The policy needs clearly defined goals with standards that can be measured, as well as a plan to actually measure progress or the lack thereof. We agree with Commissioner McIsaac and the department that this policy is less prescriptive and argue that this subsequently reduces any environmental benefit of the policy. While we appreciate that the commissioners took our previous comments into consideration, subsequent editing has dramatically altered the intent of those comments. Examples include on page 2, where it says hatchery programs allow for the recovery of depressed wild populations. We recommend that it be changed to hatchery programs engage in the recovery of depressed populations. On page 3, number 4, basic intent reads that hatchery programs should be consistent with ESA and where there are not listed fish to balance the need to minimize impacts with benefits. We want to reiterate that just meeting ESA does not rebuild populations. It does not get you out of a constraining stock hole, and a general directive to balance impacts does not keep you from driving currently viable wild populations into the same listed situation. Per our intent, we recommend this be changed to read, hatcheries shall be managed in a manner that does not impair the resource. Hatchery genetic management plan provision should reflect the important activities needed to provide sustainable fisheries into the future while minimizing genetic and ecological risks to wild populations to not impair this critical resource. Page four, number six, where it states the department shall strive to secure necessary funding to ensure that department operated hatchery facilities comply with environmental regulations for hatchery operations, including passage facilities, water intake screenings, and pollutant and disease control systems. We recommend this be changed to the department shall ensure that department operated hatchery facilities comply with environmental regulations for hatchery operations, including passage facilities, water intake screenings, and pollutant and disease control systems, and will prioritize funding to accomplish this. Page 4, number 7, we recommend dropping the wording that have not had substantial genetic modification from past hatchery practices are now in a healthy condition with little or no same species run hatchery influence. Instead, we would put this highest status on populations that have sustainable habitat, which includes populations that have some minor hatchery influence. The intent of our comment is to provide populations with the tools necessary to adapt with our changing climate. We recommend the wording be changed to, in considering the risks of possible deleterious impacts to wild salmon and steelhead populations from hatchery programs conducted in accordance with this policy, the highest level of protection from possible negative effects of hatchery programs to wild populations shall be provided to those wild populations that have the habitat necessary to sustain the natural spawning population and can adapt with its watershed. The process for identifying such populations shall begin immediately after the adoption of this policy, and the Commission shall consider approving a list of such populations on or before the first annual update report on the implementation of this policy. Given the threats for salmon and steelhead in the ocean, estuaries, and throughout their watershed, we recommend that the Commission engage what we consider the world's most robust and diverse hatchery system in mechanisms that will actually help to recover and restore populations rather than exacerbate existing problems. We ask the program to identify predicted changes for the watershed, fish populations, and hatchery operations, and how each change will impact the facility's ability to successfully provide for sustainable fisheries without negative impact to wild populations while recovering and restoring those wild populations, and to identify what species, life histories, and release strategies will need to be adjusted to address future conditions and decrease impacts to wild populations. In closing, I would like to ask the department, what specifically were you not able to do under the old policy? And with that, I thank you for your time.
Madam Vice Chair, I have a couple of questions for Jessica.
Go ahead, Chair Carpenter.
Jessica, one is my recall. You had previously worked for a coastwide Habitat Restoration Group, if I recall correctly?
I was the previous director of the Coast Salmon Partnership, which is one of the seven salmon recovery organizations in the state.
Okay, thank you for that. The other question I have that's more pertinent, if you haven't, would you submit your comments in writing? Because I couldn't write that fast.
Yep, not a problem. We're happy to share these additional comments in writing. I'll send them in right now.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions for Ms. Helsley? Commissioner Kehoe, got to unmute.
Thank you. Little trigger slow this morning. So thank you, Jessica, for your testimony. I want to ask you about your statement concerning ESA. And I'll kind of paraphrase, but please correct me if I get it wrong. Basically, you're saying that just compliance with ESA will not promote recovery. Is that what I understand you to say?
Correct.
Okay. I will say that, that's been a similar theme we've heard throughout, but I'm going to challenge you on that. What is your basis for such a statement or an assertion?
If you look at all of the requirements of ESA for listed species, it's all about bringing those species up to a threshold just barely above what would trigger listing under the ESA. It's a cycle, a never-ending cycle, versus thinking more broadly as to say once or at a higher category, if you will, a higher threshold. You know, ESA is kind of the low bar. So if all we're doing is managing these populations to meet this minimum low bar standard, we will perpetually find ourselves in this threat of listing thrust, cycle that is somewhat never ending versus trying to manage for a much higher bar than the standards required by ESA. If you look at populations on the coast, for example, there's many of the populations on the coast, we have very little population level data from, because spending in the state is prioritized for listed species. And what you see us is managing to continually declining populations on the coast because we're not dedicating the resources necessary to actually reverse that trend.
Madam Chair, may I follow up, please?
Yes, quickly. Bob, go ahead.
I mean, this is an important point. So I want to make sure that we kind of get to the bottom of this. So appreciate your comments about coastal stocks, but those are not listed, correct?
Correct, but the same principle applies to this concept of managing to just above the ESA threshold. And I'm happy to expand upon that in the written comments that we submit
And one last follow-up, Madam Chair, and then I'm done. Thank you very much. So my understanding is that for ES-listed stocks, right, there's an ESA listing, and then there needs to be a recovery plan submitted to NOAA. And the recovery plan includes not only avoidance of extinction, but also recovery of stocks. And this is under ESA recovery plans. So with all due respect, I don't see your argument as being very persuasive that compliance with ESA does not promote recovery. So I'll just let you respond to that, and then we can move on. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. In state of time here, Commissioner Kehoe, I appreciate the questions. And as I stated just previously, I'm happy to expand upon that concept and provide a much more persuasive response in writing. And we'll get that to you within several hours.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Nikki. Next.
Commissioner Thorburn's hands up.
Oh, go ahead, Commissioner Thorburn.
Thank you. I just wanted to add one observation to Commissioner Kehoe's questions, and that is, he's exactly right about preventing extinction and recovery planning. Take is only one component of both of those. And really, to say that a threshold on take impairs recovery
is kind of simplistic in my thinking. So I just wanted to make that observation.
All right, Nikki, next public person.
Next, we've got Joe Hiss, followed by Kim McDonald. Go ahead, Joe. Make sure to unmute yourself, Joe.
Okay, now we're talking.
There you go. We can hear you.
Yeah, okay. I am a retired fish and wildlife biologist. I retired 12 years from U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service here in Lacey, formerly Olympia. And I wanted to make some comments on the draft. I thought that in general, there were some good points. I did take account of weasel words, however, minimize, balance, and relatively high. And I think that those are all words that have to be better specified by the language of the document. I have a bunch of other questions. I'm also going to submit written comments because I have many, many questions on this draft. I think that so far the commissioners and public have done a great job. So I would say keep up the good work. The draft does need some further changes, and I do intend to submit some suggestions. Thank you.
Make sure to unmute yourself, Barbara.
Oh, okay.
Sorry. I was trying to keep the phone from ringing. Any more questions for Mr. Hiss from commissioners? Okay, let's go, Nikki. I'm going to keep myself muted for a while, and so you just take it, Nikki, okay, going through the public testimony.
Okay. Next, we've got Kim McDonald, followed by Gregory Fitz. Go ahead, Kim. Make sure to unmute yourself.
If I'm unmuted now.
Yep, we can hear you.
Hi, thank you, Commissioner Chair Carpenter and Vice Chair Baker. My name is Kim McDonald. I am a Trout Unlimited volunteer, a member of the Cascade chapter, and have been active with Trout Unlimited for almost two decades now. Trout Unlimited in Washington State has over 4,000 members. And while we are passionate anglers, we are even more devoted to protecting, restoring, and enhancing cold water fisheries in the state and in the region. We've devoted innumerable volunteer and professional staff time working on those goals. We appreciate the opportunity to be engaged in this hatchery policy review, and we recognize that hatchery programs have a place in the management framework for fisheries in the state, and a place for the recovery of our listed species. However, we also believe that in order to achieve these various program objectives, we need rigorous policies that reduce the risks to natural origin populations, support recovery goals, and minimize the ecological interactions to wild populations. And that's key for us. We've been closely following the staff concerns regarding this proposal, and we're generally supportive of the science-based guidelines and principles that were laid out in the original hatchery reform policy that was adopted by the commission in 2009. The current direction of this policy, C3619, which started in early 2018, causes us some serious concerns. We cannot support the current policy, which has removed the HSRG guidelines, even though the new policy claims to have good intentions by following HGMPs for both listed and unlisted populations. This removal leaves the unlisted populations on the coast, which Jessica spoke to, with no backstop from NIMS or HSRG, and puts them under threat from ecological and genetic impacts of hatchery projection. While the intentions are good, there is too much flexibility without sound HSRG guidelines or NIMS support. Without this, where do the protections land for these programs? And with the removal of the HSRG guidelines, we believe the language for monitoring and evaluation and adaptive management of programs is, I guess, for lack of a better term, squishy at best, and leaves a lot of room for interpretation. HGMPs are not designed to be monitoring and evaluation plans. Removal of this, plus the uphill battle to constantly fund such programs, further removes critical data needed to understand impacts and adaptively manage the programs. We do not support the removal of Guideline 11, the removal of which calls for the goal of establishing at least one wild salmonid management zone for each species in each major population group, biogeographical region, in each ESU DPS. The removal of this guideline undermines the implementation and concurrence with statewide steelhead management plan. I listened in on Monday's Fish Committee meeting, and we are concerned about the communication between WDFW staff and the commission with regards to the policy review. We want to emphasize that we think their concerns should be listened to and appropriately addressed. With these various rounds of edits that have happened over the course of the long process, it's alarming to hear three commissioners still unsure of the detailed concerns that WDFW policy staff and science staff share with the commission. We also support the WDFW staff's hatchery and fishery reform policy implementation assessment, their draft progress report on this policy, which states the previous policy wasn't fully implemented or given a chance to work. And last
time.
Oh, sorry, thank you. I'm open for any questions and I can submit my testimony in a written form.
Is there any commissioners that have any questions for Kim? Okay, seeing none, thank you, Kim.
Thank you.
Okay, next we've got Gregory Fitz followed by Greg King. Go ahead, Gregory. Make sure to unmute yourself.
Good morning. Thank you to the commission for the opportunity to comment. My name is Gregory Fitz. I'm representing the Wild Steelhead Coalition today. My board of directors has asked that we take this opportunity to reiterate our comments submitted earlier in September, essentially expressing our deep concern that the 2009 Hatchery Scientific Review Group guidelines seem to be being abandoned in this proposed policy change, and that deeply concerns us. We are also incredibly concerned that these policy changes, the recommended policy changes, seem to be running contrary to WDFW science and policy staff recommendations. And, you know, it's our observation and concern that this is a series of decisions starting to be made out of political convenience rather than based on sound science-based policy. And so that's where we are landing. Thank you.
All right, thanks, Gregory. Do any commissioners have any questions for Gregory? Okay, seeing none, thanks, Gregory. Okay, followed next is Greg King. Go ahead, Greg. Make sure to unmute yourself. Hey, Greg, I see you unmuted yourself, but I don't hear you.
Can you hear me now, Nikki?
Oh, yes, we can hear you now.
Good morning, Commission. Chair Carpenter. My name is Greg King. I represent Puget Sound Anglers Lower Columbia River Chapter. I'd like to state that we've been doing wild fish recovery since 1984. We spent billions of dollars on wild fish recovery and habitat in the Columbia River Basin with no results of wild fish sustaining themselves. We do have evidence of flawed science with the Hood River study and the Cousteau study. I don't know if the Ian Quarters Clackamas River study was taken into account when we started this process back in June of 18. Sportsmen were cut out of the process. We had to scrape and fight to get into this Washington Academy of Science building to even participate in this process. Everything shows that HSRG is a tool, not a rule. And everything shows that the importance of hatchery and recovery of wild fish. We only have to look at some of the stuff that's going on this fall. We had a coho fishery in the Grand Ron River. We had over 100,000 coho go over Bonneville Dam. Amazing stuff. We have the Yakima Nation doing amazing stuff. We're showing that hatchery fish on the Talus River can recover wild fish populations. We know that the genetics are still in those hatchery fish from wild fish. I don't know why we sit here and we kick the can down on the road on this policy. You guys voted 9-0 to move forward on this, and we're kicking the can down the road more and more on this policy. I know staff has did some hard work. I know Ron Warren's done some hard work on this. I know that the whole commission has done this. But we had a 9-0 decision on this. We should be moving forward on this policy. The Cowlitz River is a great example. There was zero fish above three dams with no fish passage. And in 1994, we started putting hatchery cohos up there. Hatchery cohos. And now we are looking at getting some great numbers back up there. And it's just amazing that this is happening. And we're seeing good things with what hatchery fish do. And we're losing habitat faster than we can gain it. But any habitat we improve on, what are we going to put in there? We don't have enough wild fish. And you know, as far as the coast goes, Willapaw Bay isn't even ESA listed. So I don't even know what we're adding ESA in and the coast about. I think we just have... we need to move forward on this. And if you don't agree on producing more hatchery fish, then you don't agree on saving orca whale. You just don't, because you're not putting the prey fish out there in the ocean for them. And I'm going to send the commission this Clackamas study that shows how flawed it is. And we should really look at this. It's a lot of mistakes were made in that study. And that is the, for lack of better words, the godfather of the wild fish phenomena that these people have. And I want to make one more last statement, and that is, there's lots of money in recovery. There's no money in recovery. So all these scientists, they have their hand out for more money and more money. When we just keep going down this road, we need to start producing some fish in Washington State. The sportsmen want it. The tribes want it, and the commercial fishermen want it. But we're being stopped by these wild fish groups, and it's just getting ridiculous. So anyway, those are my comments. Thank you.
Thank you, Greg. Does any commissioners have any comments for Greg? Okay, seeing none. Thank you, Greg. Okay, next we've got caller 3514. Please state your name for the record. Make sure to unmute yourself. Give him just one more second. Then we can come back to him. Okay. Next, we've got Jacques White.
Hello.
Oh, wait. Hello. Hi, can you state your name for the record, please?
I'm sorry, Nikki, for some reason I was muted. Yeah, Heath Heikala for the record. Good morning, commissioners. Gotcha. How are you?
So I've been listening. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Nikki, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay.
I can hear you.
Thank you.
Yeah, go ahead.
So good morning. Thank you. Good morning, commissioners. I was listening to this. I wasn't necessarily going to comment, but then I decided to after listening to some of this. I do want to go back and do a little bit of ESA here. And under Section 7 of the Endangered Species Act, which is where many of the consultations are done on hatcheries if they have a federal nexus, Section 7 is not a recovery standard, I think it is important to note. The standard under Section 7 is to not appreciably reduce the likelihood of survival, if it says and recovery, but it is not a recovery standard. So I want to make that very clear in terms of some of the comments that were made earlier. I would also point out that a recovery plan is a non-regulatory document. And actually, NOAA is the one that prepares recovery plans under the Endangered Species Act. So I would encourage folks to just kind of, I think Ms. Hensley was going to follow up in a written form. I think that would be good. I just want to offer a couple comments, which are both watching this policy, how things have unfolded, watching, of course, the Columbia River policy, including the most recent rationale document, quote unquote, that was drafted, posted, and then removed from the website. I've watched this commission for 10 plus years, and I have not seen, anything handled like it has been handled here in the recent months in terms of how these documents are being drafted. The lack of staff involvement in many cases in this, and really a handful of commissioners that have taken over some of these things. I personally don't think that's in the long-term interest of the department or the commission as a whole. I do believe that it is, frankly, that it is undercutting the credibility of the department and even the commission as a whole. And I don't think that's in the long-term interest of either. So anyhow, I appreciate the time, and I hope you guys have a good day. Thank you.
Thanks, Heath. Do any commissioners have any questions for Heath? Okay, seeing none. Thank you. Let's see. Next, we've got Jacques White, followed by J. Michelle Swope. Go ahead, Jacques.
Okay, good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Hi, I'm Jacques White. I'm the executive director of Long Live the Kings. We're a nonprofit organization focused on wild salmon and steelhead recovery and supporting sustainable fishing in the Pacific Northwest. In that vein, we actually run two hatcheries. Both of them deal with wild fish recovery, but one of them is focused on producing Chinook to support harvest. So we are certainly not anti-hatchery. And in fact, as a member of the governor's Southern Resident Orca Task Force, we voted to approve the increases in hatchery production, the final version that was put forward, as we thought that was a thoughtful compromise, weighing risk against the needs of killer whales and also supporting fisheries up and down the Pacific coast. I want to thank the commission for prolonging the comment period. We were the organization that requested that, and we put our comments in last month. So I appreciate that. A couple of things I wanted to focus on are I generally agree with all of the comments that Ron Warren put up on the second page of the comments that he shared with you today from the public. Some specific issues that I'd like to address is we have concerns about the lack of involvement of the department staff in the crafting of this document, and particularly the staff came to the commission and reported out that in one meeting that the science underlying the hatchery reform policy put forward in 2009 had not significantly changed, that we still had the same concerns, or they still had the same concerns, and the some of all the scientific research indicated that there could be risks related to hatchery production to wild fish stocks and wild fish recovery. Secondly, I think they did a presentation on the implementation of the hatchery reform recommendations, and to the extent that we had tracked whether or not those had been implemented and what the impact were, And there isn't significant evidence that we have done our monitoring and subsequent adaptive management related to hatchery reform policy. For a professional organization that must rely on science to drive its decision-making, that is quite concerning as a taxpayer. And we certainly strive to not operate our organization that way, but to pay attention to what's going on. Related to Commissioner Kehoe's comment about whether or not HGMPs provide an adequate standard for wild fish recovery, I think in Puget Sound there is a problem because the recovery plan calls for recovery to sustainable levels that can support fishing. And I don't think that that standard is embodied in the HGMP for each one of the hatcheries. So I think we do have a disconnect, and I think there's an important role for the commission and the co-managers to evaluate whether or not we're making adequate progress in terms of our hatchery management to meet the ultimate recovery goals for Puget Sound. I'm a member of the Puget Sound Salmon Recovery Council, and we work diligently to focus on that. In response to Greg King's comments about spending billions of dollars on hatchery recovery in the Columbia, certainly in Puget Sound, we've spent a fair amount of money, but we have been underspending our targets for recovery by about 50% on an annual basis. And so we are not making the kind of progress we need to. And so that means that, whether or not we're making progress on salmon recovery depends on a lot of things. Are we implementing hatchery reform? Are we spending the funds we need to recover habitat at the rate we are? These things work together, and it's important to take that kind of perspective. So I urge the commission to review the current draft policy and make some of the changes that have been requested. And we will continue to track this and support your efforts because I believe that the mission of our organization and the mission of the commission and the department overlap almost perfectly for salmon and steelhead management. So thank you very much for taking my comments. Thanks for your hard work, and I appreciate seeing the next draft.
Thanks, Jacques. Is there any questions for Jacques from the commissioners? Okay, seeing none, we'll move on to J. Michelle Swope. Go ahead. Make sure to unmute yourself.
Wonderful. Can you hear me?
We can hear you.
Thank you so much. Good morning, commissioners, Chair Carpenter, and Nikki. My name is J. Michelle Swope, and I work for the Native Fish Society in our Washington State program. I appreciate the time you've extended to us for these public comments. This updated policy draft represents a move away from using the best available science in hatchery and harvest management, and is a stark departure from the original policy adopted in 2009, intent to recover wild fish. This recent draft policy is troubling because it removes the emphasis on the scientific and systematic redesign of hatchery programs to help recover wild salmon and steelhead and support sustainable fisheries. And as it said, shifted to a value-based approach to improve hatchery effectiveness. This draft policy is troubling because it does not require that WDFW use the best available science to make adaptive changes, but rather just a well-informed program. It contradicts WDFW's own science and puts at risk past ongoing and future recovery work for wild populations of native fish. It prioritizes increased hatchery production under the guise of recovering orca whales, yet current science shows us hatchery supplementation of Chinook salmon to feed orca whales is not a solution and does not work. This removes the directive to study and promote the use of alternative fishing methods that can reduce impacts to wild fish while maximizing hatchery fish catch. And in short, this policy is troubling as it is short-sighted and fails to consider that recovering wild populations is the best way to ensure long-term ecosystem health and harvest opportunity for the region's fishing industry and tribal nations. I thank you for your time, and I will submit my comments in writing.
Thanks, Michelle. Do any commissioners have any questions for her? Okay, seeing none. Thanks, Michelle. Our last person for comment is Butch Smith. Ooh, sorry, nope, I take that back. I've got Butch Smith followed by Wild Fish Conservancy. Go ahead, Butch. Make sure to unmute yourself.
Good morning, Commission. Butch Smith, President of the Owako Charter Association, Waco Port Commissioner, and a member of the PFMC Council. You know, I listened to this, and being one of the ones in the room that this policy just didn't start in 2009, that was when it was adopted by the commission. It started much earlier and was basically force-fed to WDF&W and our co-managers like a glass full of castor oil. There was major issues why this policy was adopted, but let's just set that aside and recognize that scientists have ownership in their work, and everybody has an ego, and I can appreciate that. I myself have a pretty big ego, but we also have got to recognize when things aren't working, and this policy is definitely not working. We've made decisions that have hurt communities, have hurt orca whales. Decisions, I encourage any new commissioners or anybody on this phone or Zoom meeting to go back and listen to Dr. Wartheit in the June 2018 commission meeting and listen to what he says. Science evolves, and this science has to evolve. Do I think that we're going to go back to the Johnny Appleseed production like we did in the 70s? No. Do I even think it's going to be in the 80s or early 90s? But we know we have to do something different, and I'm going to give you an example. Yellow-eye rockfish at the council level was 50 years to recover it, would decimate the whole coast and all fisheries. 75 years to recovery, let fishing happen while the yellow-eyed rockfish would still recover, but just at a little slower rate. It turned out yellow-eyed rockfish will be recovered not in 2075, but looks like 2024. And the policy on PIOS, we never got to comment on that. Back in the day, we never got to comment on at 0.5%, what it mean at 0.5% versus 0.7% or 0.8%. And all rivers aren't created equal. And you know, even with this policy change, probably some rivers will have to remain at the current PIOS level, but why giving adapted management to maybe on some rivers to increase the PIOS? So I encourage you to move this forward. And I want to remind the commission, there are three managers in salmon. NOAA Fisheries, our tribal managers, our co-managers, and WDF&W. And between all three of those are the best scientists in the world. And there is checks and balances. And I think you're going to find out when you meet with the co-managers on whatever day it was, November or December, November 17th or whatever that day was. You're going to find out that they have the same concerns as the orca whale, as the communities on the coast, and their communities. And so I encourage that we keep this ball rolling, we get it to a vote of the commission, and I will tell you that I think, I guess it's Mr. Heikla made a comment that I think was disingenuous, or I guess armchair quarterback, because I guess it just depends what issue, side of the issue you're on. I think this commission has taken some very, very disingenuous policies left by the previous commission and gave them enough time to work or not work and took the bull by the horns to improve them. That's the way I look at this. You know, you guys volunteer your time, but you guys aren't a bunch of chuckleheads from some far corners of the world. You guys have lived through this also and have been in the Northwest. Some have been managers of salmon. Some have doctorate of science in salmon. And so I want to say that out here in the coast and other places and some of my tribal partners see this as a real benefit of moving forward and maybe looking at some of the mistakes we made in the past and doing what we're supposed to do is keep moving forward and fix what's not working. So I'll leave it at that. And thank you for this opportunity and encourage you to keep moving forward, encourage you to listen to the co-managers and finally give them a voice where a lot of them felt they were left out way back in the early 2000s of this process. So thank you very much.
Thanks, Butch. Is there any comments from the commissioners or questions? Okay, seeing none, we will move on to the next one. We've got Wild Fish Conservancy. Thank you. Go ahead.
Yeah, hello, this is Jamie Glasgow, Director of Science for Wild Fish Conservancy. Can you hear me, Nikki?
Yes, I can hear you.
Great, thanks. Thank you, Chair Carpenter, commissioners. And thanks also, Nikki. We've been typing a lot lately, and I want to say I'm really grateful for your competence and professionalism through all this process.
Thank you.
This policy rewrite, as I understand it, is intended to enable substantial increases in hatchery production to levels that are currently prevented by the science-based guidelines in the existing policy. The increases are proposed in watersheds where the wild salmon and steelhead are believed to, by some, to be beyond saving. And those watersheds will be determined in a process that's going to be developed later on. The department's own science provided in the two reports you requested is clear. The impacts of such increases would not be isolated to those watersheds where the hatchery fish are released. These increases will impact healthy fish, wild fish populations in adjacent watersheds, wherever hatchery fish encounter wild fish in our streams, estuaries, and oceans, and wherever hatchery fish stray and spawn with wild fish in excess of HSRG thresholds. I can share specific examples of where this is happening right now, even at current production levels, and despite the limiting monitoring data that are available. We aren't alone in our concerns with this policy rewrite. Mr. Warren voiced the department's concerns in the Fish Committee meeting just a few days ago on Monday when he said that the policy rewrite is less restrictive from a biological, scientific, and environmental perspective. He said that's a tough place for the department to be given recovery standards and all the work the state and the governor and the tribes are doing. Mr. Warren also voiced his concern about the lack of prescriptions and measurable outcomes in the current draft of the policy. If that's not enough to give you pause, I hope you'll read or reread the comments you've received from the Governor's Salmon Recovery Office, the Lower Columbia Fish Recovery Board, Long Live the Kings, the Wild Salmon Center, the Conservation Angler, members of the Hatchery Scientific Review Group, Trout Unlimited, the Native Fish Society, and other science-based organizations that are united in their efforts to recover resilient wild fish populations and all they provide. Read the reports that were prepared by WDFW science staff and the Washington Academy of Natural Sciences. They review the sound science behind the original policy 3619 and document the department's failure to implement that policy. And if you're still unconvinced, listen to your fellow commissioners who are voicing their concern about the extent to which this draft abandons hatchery reform science. We're still not seeing many of the concerns raised by the public and staff addressed in this latest draft. Given the statewide significance of this policy, we urge you to stop this rush to the December meeting. Restore the HSRG guidelines that were abandoned and reset the development of a new hatchery policy that is based in sound science and informed by an environmental impact statement. Thanks again for the opportunity to provide these comments. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Is there any questions for Jamie by the commissioners? Okay, seeing none, thanks, Jamie. Next, we've got Conrad Gowell, followed by David with the conservation anglers. Go ahead, Conrad.
Thank you, Nikki. Commissioners, am I coming through okay?
Yes, we can hear you.
My name is Conrad Gowell, a biologist with the Wildfish Conservancy, and I just wanted to take a little bit of time to make sure you received our SEPA supplement that was sent to you on October 20th, and I think most recently yesterday, and that you've been able to incorporate it into the record. There's a few things that are important in that, in a public disclosure request that we received, and that was the understanding that the state hatchery program is never undergone environmental review of its hatcheries, as was promised when the 2009 policy was completed. There was the indication that a phased review would be conducted on hatchery action implementation plans, but those were never done. And so I'm curious as why there's such a rush in moving this forward without an understanding from a scientific perspective, as would be completed by an environmental impact statement under the state environmental policy. It's not just a procedural hurdle or a box to check. It is the process by which it ensures non-project issues like this policy it's what prevents it from, it's the backstop that allows us not to abandon science when developing state policy. And it's something that should be conducted, allowed for the public to review and comment on when the final policy language has been developed. And when I was listening into the Fish Committee meeting, Commissioner Graybill, I believe, said, you know, every time we look at this document, there are significant changes. And I don't know that this document is fully cooked. And I agree, even with the documents that were submitted to this meeting, they're ever changing. Every time I compare a document between this time and the last time something was developed, there are substantial policy changes and wording changes. And we're getting so far away from the environmental reviews, which were found to not be a determination of non-significance, that I don't believe we're meeting that threshold. And I believe we are abandoning science and trying to push this policy forward before it's finalized or before it's ready. And then I did want to speak just briefly on the public process. Once again, there's been little public notice and no sharing of the draft policy to the Fish Committee until hours before the meeting. And so I'm wondering how you believe the public can actually comment effectively on the policy language when it's changing so quickly and only provided hours or days in some cases before public testimony is requested. And we've raised this topic of public process numerous times, and we're not seeing improvement. In fact, the most recent change in schedule when this agenda item was struck from the full commission meeting hasn't even been posted on the policy development website. So people who would be looking for what's going on would assume that meeting already took place and would not have access to this current draft to be able to comment on. So in the interim, and given that the science review found no substantial differences in the state of hatchery science, I think it is important to reinstate the three HSRG guidelines. And then from a process standpoint, I think it's important not to treat the tribes as just stakeholders and really honor co-management decisions. Going to the tribes at the very last minute when you feel like you've developed all of your policy language absent a meaningful public engagement process isn't the way to do it. It's to work with the tribes and the public and move things forward with good policymaking. So with that, I appreciate everyone taking my comments today, and I welcome any questions.
Thanks, Conrad. Are there any comments or questions from the commissioners? Okay, seeing none, we'll move on. Thanks again, Conrad. Next, we've got David at the Conservation Angler. David, go ahead. Can you please also state your last name for the record?
Hi, yes, this is David Moskowitz with the Conservation Angler. Can you hear me okay?
We can hear you just great. Thanks, David.
Thank you very much. David Moskowitz with Conservation Angler based in Edmonds, Washington, and I appreciate the opportunity. The commission, we believe, made an arbitrary decision to begin to revise policy 3619 before adequately analyzing its suitability and performance. Indeed, the June 2018 staff presentation demonstrated accomplishments across the board when examining performance against goals for the policy implementation. The policy did not fail. It was succeeding. It only needed to have its monitoring, evaluation, and management elements to be consistently funded and implemented. The arbitrary decision to suspend the first three HSRG criteria, which are the backbone of the policy, suspended during policy review, was a pretty substantial process and substance mistake. And indeed, the scientific review by the Washington Academy and the department's scientific staff found no substantial changes in the state of scientific understanding of the impacts of hatcheries, and indeed found that there were few examples and scant evidence of where hatcheries don't have effects, adverse effects of wild fish. Suspending the criteria will also create significant ESA review issues further down the road, delaying implementation of hatchery reform in Washington. The fact that Washington staff still has unresolved concerns related to risk management, hatchery goals, and adaptive management, those portions of this draft revised policy, is very concerning. And if your science and policy staff have unresolved concerns, then the policy is not ready for prime time. One of the key things that has been talked about as a need to revise the policy is providing prey for killer whales. And that is speculative and ignores the permanent changes in ocean marine productivity. What will happen is that increased hatchery production will not yield the adult returns anticipated, nor the benefits. In fact, there will just be further detriments and further damage done. The excess releases will increase predator attraction in Puget Sound and in the Columbia River. We'll have increased straying and problems with PHAS. And there's no guarantee that with the reduced ocean productivity that the size of the prey will actually make a difference for these whales. The ocean and marine carrying capacity is already overtaxed from large releases of salmon, hatchery salmon in Japan, Russia, Alaska, and British Columbia. The pasture is overgrazed, and it's time to rest the field. And I hope that our commissioners Lindville and Anderson will consider the implications of further pounding this ocean ground with more hatchery fish. Mitigation as a role for hatcheries, it was agreed upon when we did not understand the impacts of hatcheries. These mitigation agreements are old and they should be reconfigured to address a whole watershed productivity and a 4-H approach. I realize this comment's outside the specific scope of this policy, but hatcheries as a mitigation tool are failing. And we can't control the impacts. Once the hatchery juveniles are rushed out of the concrete wasteways and past the barbed wire, there's no controls over the biological, ecological, and environmental impacts. The Conservation Angler very much appreciates the manner in which the department and department staff and the commission have provided for public comment during the COVID-19 precautions. These have allowed groups like ours to interact, I think, in a positive manner with the commission. We appreciate the excellence of the staff work in allowing this to happen. However, for this process, as private prior commenters have noted, there are process problems since those HSRG criteria were suspended June 2018. We ask, the Conservation Angler asks that the commission set aside this process until the department staff can resolve their concerns with the current draft. And as Chair Carpenter said at the Fish Committee meeting, getting it right is more important than getting it done. We appreciate the opportunity to comment and happy to answer any questions and appreciate the ability to go over my 3 minutes. Thank you.
Any questions for David from the commissioners? All right, seeing none, thank you, David. Next, we've got Ron Gardner. Go ahead, Ron. Make sure to unmute yourself.
Can you hear me?
Yep, we can hear you.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Commissioners, Fish Committee, everyone today for the chance to speak on behalf of this work being done on the hatchery policy. I'm State Board President, Puget Sound Anglers, 15 chapters statewide, representing thousands of families, fishing and conservationists. A lot of us do work with rehabilitation on habitat, and a lot of us also have stream incubators, net pens and such to try and keep our fisheries going. So we're not just taking, we're also helping. Currently, I'm working with the Stiller Guamish tribe to see what we can do to help them with seals. So I'm also one of the Orca Task Force members. I was chosen to be on that, and also a Billy Frank Jr. Coalition, which is a coalition of tribes and quite a few other organizations. And I would like to go back to the June 2020 commission meeting, or 2018, I'm sorry, of why this was brought up. Ken Warhite had an excellent presentation that showed that it would take 300 to 500 years for fisheries, wild fish, to recover in Puget Sound. And that was only under using Bristol Bay conditions, which we have nothing close to Bristol Bay conditions. Why was this policy being relooked at? It's because it wasn't working. As Commissioner Carpenter said, what they're doing was not working. So the policy in 2009 was written, and HSRG was reading into it. And at the time, that was going to be our savior. It was thought to be what was going to happen. Well, what's happened? We've cut back our hatchery production in the Puget Sound area, 63 million Chinook and Coho since 1992 per year. That with a half a percent return rate would put a lot more fish back out there. But what we're doing is we're trying to blame this policy, saying that this policy cannot work. Well, the HSRG has not worked. It was a theory. There is no paper that's ever been written to prove that it's right. It was nothing more than a theory. The tribes were forced by appropriations of Congress to sign on to this or lose federal funding. They were never on board with this. And this is a tribal state policy that's coming up. And I've been working with the tribes quite a bit, Northwest Indian Fisheries Commission, individual tribes, and none of the ones I'm working with are for going back to the old policy. They do not want to see HSRG in there, and it's time to move forward with this policy the way it is. We have to start acknowledging that it's not coming back. You look anywhere you drive in Western Washington, you cannot see construction going up. You cannot see streams that have houses built by them, farms. Everywhere you look are roads. None of this is natural habitat, nothing. People talk about climate change. It's always been changing. We used to have glaciers here. They're not here now. It's going to continue to change no matter what we do. So what has happened is we've lost 85% of our coastal tidal habitat in Washington, Oregon, California. That's in a August 14th, 2019 study from NOAA. We don't have what it takes to support these big wild runs of fish anymore. And there's no way that you can't see that we are losing habitat faster than it's being rebuilt. Now, all the way along, there was a lot of checks and balances, and they ended up using the Washington Academy of Sciences that produced a white paper. Well, that white paper omitted the use of two tribal hatchery positive scientists. They did not use any of their work. They omitted them. It was a draft paperwork. And it went forward. It should have never been allowed to be draft because it was done under this hatchery policy. and that really should be pulled back. A lot of people have made millions of dollars off of the HSRG, and if you recovered fish, they wouldn't have a job. So there are things that can be done, but without the proper habitat and dealing with the pinnipeds, pinnipeds are eating six times the amount of fish that we are. What happens if you cut hatchery production back? You're going to have your naturally spawning fish getting eat at a higher rate, because as of right now, there are no tools being used to stop in the Puget Sound and in Washington, other than the Columbia River. There's no tools being used to discourage predators. The predators.
Hey, Ron, you're at time.
Okay, I'll just wrap this up. So I would like to, on behalf of Puget Sound anglers in Washington State, we would like to see this move forward and keep going, and to become, with no third party oversight between the state and the tribes, use the hatchery genetic management plans that we have, that are required we work under, and we don't need additional restrictions. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Ron. Any questions from the commissioners? Okay, not seeing any. Thanks, Ron, have a great day. Okay, Vice Chair Baker, back to you.
So I wanna really thank the people who took their time today to sign on and talk to us about this policy. This is the end of this agenda, but I suspect that some commissioners will have something to say. So let's open it up, unless there are anything that we need to talk about before. So specifically, staff, Director Suslin, Ron, are there things that we need to think about before we get to commissioner comments on this policy? Okay, I'm not hearing anything. So, any commissioners have anything they'd like to add? I see Don's hand. Commissioner McIsaac.
Thank you, Madam Vice Chair. Let me also join you in thanking the public for all the thoughtful public comment. This is a very important issue, and I'm glad to see everybody thinking about this in a very serious matter. I think it's important that we do put the Fish Committee draft out for public review and tribal co-manager policy reaction for our consideration in December. This was what was in the staff recommendation, I guess, or the staff presentation. And I think that's a good thing to do. I'm willing to make a motion to that effect if you feel necessary, but I'd like to maybe hear from other commissioners first. I think doing so would address some of the comments we heard about the public process, for example. How is the public supposed to comment on these changes? We've just seen them just recently. And, you know, what's a good way for us to weigh in on these? A good way to weigh in on them and think about them is to put this out for public comment and let them do so that we can consider their comments in December. I think that it has only been on the website for a brief period of time, which it would have been if we would have been on the previous schedule as well. And the decision originally on October 24th was to put something out for further review that we could talk to the tribes about and bring back in December. So some of the public comments make me think maybe they hadn't read that draft that was just recently posted that closely. And I think we should offer them the opportunity to take another hard look at that because of some of the comments we heard. But I'd like to address two parts that came up during the public comment kind of consistently. One had to do with our challenge on the use of science in this new draft. And the other one, there's quite a bit of discussion about the staff recommendations or the staff input into this. And just a few comments on that, having been involved in that through the process. But on the matter of science, I wrote down several times when we heard from the folks that this new policy language abandons the science. Another piece of testimony here this new policy language is not being based on sound scientific policy. We must rely on the science as if this policy does not. This policy moves away from using the best available science. This abandons the policy, hatchery reform science, some negative comment about sound science, and again, abandons the science. So this is a very serious question here, and it's on the question of a lot of people's minds, and certainly has been on the question of my mind throughout this involvement. And I would not support new policy language that abandons the science or contradicts what we know about the science that's out there. We did get a report from folks that the essence of the old science has not been refuted, that the principles that the HSRG folks have used in some of their recommendations, the principles are sound. We may not have heard enough on the emerging science, but I don't want to have a policy that has any language that one can point to that says this abandons the science. And at our last writing group meeting, that question was posed. Is there any language in this review policy before we take it to the Fish Committee that someone could point to and says, here's a spot where science has been abandoned and not any good? So, Madam Vice Chair, maybe the best way to illustrate my perception right now that this policy does not abandon the science at any point, I'd like to show that here and say why I think that. And if this happens to be a wrong perspective, then I think it would be good for us to hear from the public about that. And as we continue the discussions with staff, that should also be a challenge to this policy language. But I'll go ahead and share this screen here, if I can, and point to the draft spots that make me believe that we don't have a situation here where we are abandoning the science. And then I'd like to come back to maybe some of the staff input here. So this is the Fish Committee recommendation. This is draft revisions to the August 1st, 2020 public review draft. And here's the purpose paragraph. This expands the purpose to include mitigation hatcheries and to talk about sustainable fisheries. There's nothing in this paragraph that abandons any science. The authority and definition intent, there was a very short one in the previous policy. This one's very short. There's nothing in this paragraph that abandons science. As a general policy statement, the department shall operate hatcheries in a manner that optimizes multiple purposes. The policy shall use scientifically defensible operations and a well-informed and adaptive risk management program. There's nothing in this paragraph that abandons science. In fact, it asks for and relies on scientifically defensible operations, calls for it as a policy advocacy. Here's a paragraph on all H business. There was one in the previous policy as well. There's nothing in here that abandons any science. Here's a section here that talks about three designations. The previous policy had two. We've added a mitigation hatchery designation. There's nothing in this edition here that abandons any scientific principles or any scientific knowledge about how hatchery and how hatcheries can be a risk to wild fish. We got a paragraph in here about killer whales, and there's nothing in here that says go abandon your science if you want to try to do something for the orca. We have a paragraph here that came at the suggestion of the staff. It's been modified a little bit in its language, but it has a lot to do with goals and definitions. There's nothing in here that abandons science. We got a paragraph here about the tribal fishing rights in USV Oregon and USV Washington, and there's nothing in here that abandons science. There's a paragraph here to move toward a joint tribal co-manager policy in the future. There's nothing there that abandons science. Let me skip down to the adaptive management section. And I'd note that there was no adaptive management section in the previous policy. And by recognizing that there's scientific uncertainty and trying to deal with some of that is a way of recognizing the scientific situation there. It certainly is not abandoning the science. And it calls for adaptive management here that is based on monitoring and evaluation and measurable outcomes and things like that.
Some of this is at the suggestion of staff. Again, maybe not their exact wording. And I'd like to hear more from staff if they'd like to, if they think some of this could be better refined. Sound adaptive management is enabled by proper scientific monitoring and evaluation. That's certainly not abandoning the science. And just having an adaptive management section where the previous policy didn't is an advancement on recognizing monitoring and evaluation and the role of a scientific feedback here. Moving backwards here, policy guideline 8, let's go take a look at weirs and see if they might help. That's not abandoning science. A lot of confusion over paragraph 7 to try to protect the best that we have and give them a higher level of protection. This would include things like, let's suppose Skagit River pink salmon are a healthy population. They've got pretty good habitat. If this paragraph advocates that we not build a pink salmon hatchery on the Skagit, that's certainly not abandoning any science. Sockeye, maybe if this paragraph said that Wenatchee Lake sockeye are a healthy, strong population, cyclical but strong and have high quality habitat, then we not build a hatchery for sockeye in Wenatchee Lake area. That's not abandoning science. Sawduck winter steelhead. How about a policy that advocates not to have hatchery programs for sawduck winter steelhead? Their habitat's up in the Olympic Forest. So this paragraph, I think, is a strong advancement on a conservation benefit here for folks. It seems to be misunderstood, but that's the intent. And you've heard me talk about a couple of fall Chinook examples too. Number 6 here, let's try to get the funding necessary. That's not abandoning science. Number 5, let's mark the hatchery fish. That's not abandoning science. So now we get to policy guideline number 4, the HGMPs. And we had some public testimony that things are a little squishy in here. We have heard from folks and including the staff that maybe this is an area that ought to be a little more prescriptive and specific. And there's arguments both ways on that. I think this is an area where we would like to have some more input. But I don't see on the surface anything here that says, let's abandon the science and go hog wild, start building hatcheries everywhere. And one of the public comments was a little bit offensive here about we've decided to move to higher hatchery levels in wild salmon areas where wild salmon populations have been judged to be not worth saving or beyond saving. There's nothing in this policy that says that, and I wouldn't support that if it did, if we have some real genuine wild populations. So anyway, I guess I just wanted to go through that because when I end up hearing that this is all a bunch of abandoning science, I just don't see that. We did hear this very critical to get back the HSRG standards, and that's a scientific thing. So let me flip over here to this is our existing policy. And here are these 3 policy guidelines that were suspended. I'll just speak to the first one here. Use the principles, standards, and recommendations of the HSRG to guide the management of hatcheries. So the principles of the HSRG business are fine. And the staff report said they're good. In fact, I didn't go through policy guidelines 1 and 2, which recognize that there are hatchery risks to wild populations and list several of them. So the new policy does recognize the principles. But when you get down to a commitment to use the policy recommendations of the HSRG to select your rebuilding schedule, is that going to be 5 generations, 7 generations, 10 generations? What about the balance of socioeconomic benefits? Should you close everything and rebuild as quickly as possible? The HSRG didn't recommend that, but that is a policy decision. That policy decision deserves to be made at this table, not outsourced to another scientific group, in my opinion, one commissioner's opinion. So the principles of science are there. The standards and recommendations that are really policy decisions, I don't think should be outsourced. That kind of a thing that is a policy decision should be one made by us. Let me just go back here again to say policy guideline one, it's recognized there can be significant genetic risk to wild salmon and steelhead. This paragraph does not abandon the science. There can be ecological risks. That paragraph doesn't abandon the science. And three, recognize there's benefits. That doesn't abandon science either. Number four, maybe we need to do some work on that one. So there's that. Quickly on the matter of whether or not we have considered the staff input so far, that was mentioned risk management and clear goals and adaptive management measures. So this review draft does have yellow highlighted components that deal with risk management, goals, and adaptive management. And the staff perspectives were considered. If the staff has more perspectives, I would like to hear them. But anyway, I think it's proper to move this draft out for public review, and let's have people take a close look at it. Let's hear what the tribal co-managers think about it, and let's see where we're at in December. I won't go into the reasons why a final decision-making was scheduled there, but right now, I think it's appropriate to move this out. Thank you for the time.
So I just like to comment on that, on this question of whether we do a motion or do this by consensus. As everybody knows, I care about process a lot. I'm uncomfortable with a motion, mainly because the more we vote on things, the more we are pigeonholed into being supportive or non-supportive of a particular policy. And I think that we have already decided this question, unless anybody has a different interpretation. When we did take this off the agenda a couple of weeks ago, we asked to have this discussion. And the point of this is to see if there's any reason why this document should not go out for public comment. So I think that we should have a consensus on the fact that, yeah, it's not, there's no particular problem with having this document go out for public comment. The more information we get back on it, the better. And so unless there's anybody who objects to the previous plan and letting this go out for public comment, I'd like to just suggest that we do so. So are there any commissioners that have thoughts on that?
Vice Chair Baker, this is Dave Graybill.
Go ahead, Commissioner Graybill.
My comment was mentioned earlier by one of the people that provided public comment, is that every time we open this document, it's changed, and not with some fairly significant changes. I wanted to thank Commissioner McIsaac for the incredible amount of work on a very complex policy. He's done excellent work on this. And correct me if I'm wrong, Don, but I think you said this policy doesn't abandon science. But I also, two different occasions during your last delivery, you said that we needed more input from staff. I don't feel comfortable that this document is in a final iteration to provide the public a document that they're commenting on, that there's still work to be done. And that's the thrust of my message, is that we need to get back to staff. We need to incorporate the comment we heard today before we can provide what I am comfortable with as a document to move forward. Thank you.
Is there any further comment from commissioners?
This is Jim Anderson.
I have my hand up.
Okay, let's go with Commissioner Anderson, if you don't mind, we're going to go to Commissioner Thorburn first and then you.
That's fine.
Go ahead, Kim.
So it sounds like maybe we don't have consensus listening to Commissioner Grayville. I was going to support moving forward because I agree with you that we had discussed this and this was the timeline. I was a little troubled by the comment that every time we take a vote, we're pigeonholed into supporting a position, the document or whatever it was that you said, that the motion simply would be to keep moving forward with this document for further public comment. I don't hear that that has anything to do with whether or not we support the policy at this point. We are doing this public process and responding to it is what I see is going on. I support the consensus, although it doesn't sound like we have it with Commissioner Grayville's comments. So we may have to take a vote because that's what this meeting was for.
Commissioner Anderson.
I support moving forward and keeping on track. I think the I think it was the Wild Fish Conservancy, Conrad Gall suggested that we need to honor the tribes and work with them. And I think one of the tasks at hand is to have a discussion with the tribes on the 17th. So, it seems to me that we need to do that. We need to be clear of what we're doing and what we're not doing. We're not, as Commissioner McIsaac pointed out, we're not abandoning science. There's the issues of risk, but I think oftentimes people will throw out different things and make certain comments and want to stop processes. And I just think we stay the course here. I think we have to have some more conversation with the staff and but that's not unusual to have staff and the commission voices different, and we resolve those things. So I'm comfortable with moving forward in a less than absolute way right now. It's just, I think to me, that's kind of what we have to do.
Commissioner Smith, you look like you want to say something.
Before I got my little hand paw print up there, I echo what Commissioner Anderson said. I support that moving ahead. He made the points that I was going to make, and the dialogue is good. I think engaging with the co-managers is critical. I did appreciate all of the comments that I heard today from the public, but I think moving ahead is appropriate at this time.
Is there anybody else who has their hand up that I can't see?
Commissioner Linville.
Commissioner Linville.
Thank you, Vice Chair. Once again, I feel like I'm going to throw a very unhelpful comment into the mix. I'm finding hatchery policy a very difficult topic to jump into as a new commissioner. There's so much background that is a little bit, it's a little bit different with the commission writing the policy. And so I just wanted to kind of say that because there's no real way to, especially in the time of COVID, for us to just have these, sort of casual conversations around this. I'm trying to get myself up to speed on this as best as I can. And boy, am I impressed with the thoughtful comments that the public has submitted. And as a biologist, a lot of them seemingly make a lot of sense. And, but I just feel like jumping into the middle of this at this stage is really hard. And I don't like, kicking cans down the road at all. But, we have to also be thinking that we're going to be having more new commissioners, maybe not soon. And so I just wanted to point out that this is a particularly tricky topic to engage on when you're coming at the tail end of the whole process. And I know that's probably not very helpful, but I just felt the need to say that I'm comfortable with putting this policy out for public review so we get more comments, as long as that isn't just a box check, that we're actually, if there are comments to incorporate, which I feel like there's going to be because the comments so far have been so thoughtful and scientifically based, seemingly. And then also, I'm probably shouldn't say this publicly, but I don't know if I'm sensing that there's still some uncomfortableness between the commission and the department staff. And if there is, and maybe I just misread that, but if there is, boy, that's something that I want to make sure is okay before we move forward with the policy too. So those are just some perspectives. I don't know if that's good, bad, or otherwise, but.
Thank you, Commissioner Linville. Commissioner Carpenter.
Thank you, Madam Vice Chair. Well, those were great comments. And I've been on the commission a while, and having said that, I still find the hatch reform piece deep, wide, and changing, always changing. And I did want to acknowledge that I very much thought that the candid comments and articulate comments by the public were good. That's why we want them to do that. That's why we're here. My position is I'm going to support sending this out with one distinct caveat. And I don't really know how to say this nicely or necessarily politely, so I'll just say it as it is. I have grave concern, and my caveat is related to the communication between staff and the commission, particularly the science individuals with long histories and education and experience. We have to work as a team. I don't want to be in a place where the commission passes something that the staff has a real problem supporting, getting behind, and implementing our policies over the time I've been on the commission have been difficult, and we've had problems with implementation. This is not one that we can have problems with implementation. Everybody from the commission down, the director and his staff that has to implement whatever we come out with, it has to be clear, candid, and precise of how they're going to do it, how they are going to do what we've asked them or told them to do. So that's my needs. I'm going to support it to move forward, going out to the public, but want to get to the bottom of the communication with the science people. Thank you.
So what I've heard is a consensus, and a consensus doesn't have to be unanimous. I'm also still trying to avoid surprise motions, and I believe I'd like to say that unless there is specific objection and the need to have a motion on this point, that we allow this document to be put out there for public comment, which I have to say is sort of a distinction without a difference, because this document is already out there for public comment. And we just, I think it's pretty clear that we have some work to do, and we go forward. So is there anybody who would like to have a formal motion on this topic? Okay, I'm not hearing anything. So the document is out for further review. I'd like to just say that I agree with everyone that we do have some work to do on this thing, and ask if there is anything further from any commissioners or staff. Okay, I'm getting ready to adjourn the meeting. Last call for comments. Okay, this Larry's doing signs in the background. This meeting is adjourned. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you, everyone. Good job, Barbara.
Bye, everybody.
Thank you, everyone.